Craven Cottage, make some noise for the team of the Fulhamish Podcast!
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. What a scorcher it was yesterday in Wolverhampton. But things weren't so white hot on the pitch. A 0-0 draw with chances not aplenty. However, Fulham did have one big opportunity to steal the 3 points up in the Black Country. But Alexander Mitrovic fluffed his lines from the spot, and Fulham had to settle for a point. But we'd all have taken a point before the game, wouldn't we, really? 2 points from two, a solid start to the Premier League. And I'm joined by three gents who have all decided to wear white t-shirts, including myself. We look like some sort of rogue barbershop quartet that have met up for a rehearsal. Starting off with Adam Farquharson, where would you be in a barbershop quartet? Bass, middle or treble?
Yeah, I'm definitely the bass notes in this.
Farrell Monk, where would you be?
Like I am on the football field, just place me anywhere. I'm just happy to be involved, really.
Fine. And making his debut on Fulhamish, Paul Cooper, hello.
Hello, Sammy.
Thank you for joining. You'd definitely be in the bass, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely the bass, yeah. In fact, lower than bass, if there is such a thing. Basement. Yeah.
I don't exactly know what the positions are in a barbershop quartet. I'm sure there is a formation that they have, but maybe I need to be educated in these things.
Yeah, probably.
I'll get swatting up. Anyway, let's get into some three-word reviews from yesterday's game. Adam, what were the best ones that came in?
Perfect. So we've got Archie, friend of the pod, with Mitro's off fire. And yep. Then slightly different to that, we've got Hutchie 100 with everyone's on fire, which I know you three lads struggled with the heat yesterday. Yes. I was lucky to be watching it from home. We've got Fabian, Fab Fulham, with injury crisis shows. Alex, pure power, with a bit heated, which is a bit of an understatement. And then we've got Matt Pollard with Molyneux, we draw.
Okay. Yeah, very good. I like that last one. That's quite clever. It took me a couple of seconds to get it, which is always a good sign of a three-word review. Farrell, let's come on to the day out. I have never been that hot at a football game. I feel like that's always quite a common topic at pubs. When's the coldest you've ever been at a football match? What's the hottest you've ever been at a football match? It will take some doing. I would probably have to go watch a football match in Saudi Arabia or something in the height of summer to be hotter than I was yesterday. That Steve Bull stand was scorching. And if I ever think back to this game, I'm not sure I'll remember Mitro's penalty. I'm not sure I'll remember the fact that Tosin and Rodak collided to give Wolves one of the most calamitous goals of all time. I will just remember how hot I was for 90 minutes.
I don't think I've ever had a conversation about a football game in the lead up to an away game going, I wonder where the sun is in comparison to where the away bit is. And I remember optimistically saying just before the game kicks off, saying to you maybe that, oh, don't worry, I think the sun might go behind the stand for the second half. And it was absolutely nowhere near going behind the stand. So we were absolutely bathed in the sunshine for the entirety of that match. And yeah, there was no escape from it. And just to sort of elevate it a little bit more, the person who was probably the most despised person at the game yesterday was whoever decided to have the flamethrowers on at Molyneux to just warm everyone up just that little bit more. The absolute intensity of that fire, it must look really good at night, but not in the height of summer, not on a day like that. Surely someone must have had a word going, should we not have the flamethrowers there? Yeah, let's not do that. Nope, there was not even a discussion. They went ahead with it. We all got singed eyebrows from it. Thanks very much, Wolves.
Yeah, Paul, I was just wondering what punishment you think that the person that decided to put the flamethrowers on at Wolves yesterday deserves, because it was honestly one of the most horrific things I've ever been through. It just kept going as well. Like, they tested it a few times before the game. I was like, oof, that's hot. And then it just kept going and going and going. And I just can't get over the absurdity of choosing to do that.
Yeah, just extraordinary. I mean, it was like being at a heavy metal concert. In fact, every single Wolves supporter looks like a heavy metal fan. And yes. I just, you know, especially with a bald head, I had to put my T-shirt on my head. And for the first time, actually, this is a first, was I got sunburnt nipples. So I was desperately seeking the Lily's stickers, but couldn't find them. So they're at every service station all the way up from London, but they weren't on my nipples. And I was suffering. Now I know, you know, what it's like.
It was extraordinary. I mean, we saw you at halftime, Paul, shirts off, and did not blame you. I have not got the confidence to pull it off, but I wished I was doing the same. Although, actually, I just don't think there was enough sunblock going around for me to brave it. It was extraordinary. But, you know, we're talking about, like, we weren't watching 22 players on that having to actually play football on a pitch and run around. We just had to stand in it for 90 minutes, Adam. And it was a weird game. I can't work out whether I'm happy with a point, a bit disappointed with a point. I guess that when you miss a late penalty, you're always going to be. I think on the balance of play, Wolves probably shaded it, and they did miss some big chances to get the 3 points, particularly in the first half. The amount of openings they made, especially in that opening 10 minutes where they just seemed to break our lines very, very easily, was slightly alarming after the amazing defensive display we saw against Liverpool.
I think we started off the game how we wanted to continue, in the fact of, you know, high pressing, and, you know, quick tempo. Unfortunately, the problem was, is, you know, as you guys found with the heat, it was just too hot to keep that up for either team. But what we did find is they exposed us down the left-hand side alarmingly amount of times, in the fact that, you know, Anthony Robinson was playing really well for, I'd probably say, the start of the game. But defensively, both him and Kenny Tete were getting exposed. I actually found that every time Wolves got in down our right-hand side as well, Kenny Tete had already made his way up the pitch. He couldn't get back in time for them as well. So I think, actually, strangely, considering we weren't playing Liverpool this week, we needed to take a slightly more defensive approach from the wing-backs in this game. Well, I'm still surprised they didn't score from any of those chances. I think that we were kept in the game largely by Rodak and Tim Ream. You know, really keeping things at bay. I can't believe we're at this stage of the season. I'm saying Tim Ream is a fairly decent starting centre back for us at this point in time. We'll come on to discuss that. But I thought that he really kept us in the game alongside Rodak. Tosin covers for maybe his misdemeanours in defence with a lot of pace. I'm still unsure how he's as quick as he is. But most of the game was played with us on the back foot. But whenever we did attack as well, there were still chances for us to score. It felt like a game where neither team really had finisher is the wrong word, because we've obviously got Alexander Mitrovic, but an actual finisher to just put the ball in the net, because there was a lot of good chances created, wasn't there?
Paul, let's come on to the defence. It was a little bit shakier yesterday. The most alarming moment was when Tosin Adebayo and Marek Rodak collided. How Pedro Neto and Pedence didn't score with not just one, but two unbelievable opportunities at that moment was kind of miraculous. After that, I kind of thought, well, if they can't score that, I don't see these lot scoring all day, because that was a gilt-edged chance. And they felt very wasteful in front of goal, Wolves.
Yeah, and there was a still on Twitter today with the Wolves forward. And I cannot understand how he missed. So I don't quite know what's going on with whether Tosin isn't calling. Rodak was you know, doing the signal afterwards about calling. And obviously we had that incident in the Liverpool game for the second goal as well, with where Ream was turning around and, you know, questioning a call. So I don't quite know about the communication at the back, which is a little bit worrying, considering it's our, you know, it's our back five from last season.
Yeah, it does feel a bit odd, Farrell, the situation that Fulham have found themselves in. We had several questions on this, but we might as well come to it now, where particularly Ream, Rodak, mostly them two, and Tosin haven't done an awful lot wrong, as in their mistakes haven't massively cost us goals, maybe the Liverpool second goal aside. It's all going quite well, but it is a bit weird that we have now Bert Leno and Issa Diop on the bench. And Marco Silva rightly saying that it's particularly Tim Ream and Marek Rodak's position to lose, but we have some real quality now into the side, but also it's almost like we're in suspended animation. We're just waiting almost for one of them to make the mistake so they get the chop, which is quite a weird position to be in. But I do respect it in other ways, rather than him just going, oh no, that's all right. We signed a better player now, so Slingy ripped him.
Yeah, we have brought in Issa Diop. We have brought in Bernd Leno to challenge those positions and, you know, raise the quality within the squad. And actually what's happening is that the people in their places are doing a good enough job and are performing quite well, barring some small minor moments here or there. And after Liverpool and after yesterday, I don't feel that they warrant being dropped, and we'll probably see all those three in the same positions come next week at Brentford.
I mean, Adam, the person that I think actually probably would warrant being dropped out of the defence is Tosin. I feel like he has made more mistakes than Ream and Rodak, but obviously we're not going to drop Tosin, which is quite an odd position to be in. It's all just a little bit weird. But look, we asked for reinforcements. We've got reinforcements. We know that the competition is there. And if the end result is that everyone ups their game, then so be it, I guess.
I think what we're trying to do is encourage a competition for places ethos. And if players are coming in and they're seeing that that's the case, that they can actually fight for their place at Fulham, that's great. Because if we've seen what happens before when players walk into Fulham, they walk straight into the team and they know that their place is completely safe. Ruben Loftus-Cheek. But when that happens and they play week in, week out, and they know that whatever they do, they're not going to get dropped, it really doesn't mean that they're going to be top of their game. I actually think that there was a comment from Marco where he actually said when Issa Diop came in, said it's great because he can play left centre-back and right centre-back. I don't think that he's coming in at right centre-back instead of Tosin, but I think it does keep Tosin on his heels a little bit, just thinking, well, actually, if he can come in either position and we're still looking at other defensive reinforcements, nobody's place in this team, bar Mitrovic, is entirely safe at any point in time. And that is, if we're bringing in the right kind of professionals, exactly how we harbour the best talent, because people are continually at the top of their game rather than just safe and relaxed.
There's one that's actually quite highlighted at the moment with David De Gea. The fact that he was having a bit of an off year a few years ago when Dean Henderson was at Sheffield United. And then Dean Henderson came back to Manchester United last year, and David De Gea was brilliant again last year. And now Dean Henderson's left. The only challenge that David De Gea has for that number one spot is Tom Heaton, surprisingly. And all of a sudden, we're now seeing that David De Gea, famously yesterday, was having a very poor performance. And I think that's very indicative of perhaps the squad mentality that we're trying to instill with a better squad and more positions being challenged.
You could tell, by the way, listening to the commentary of that game in our car, Farrell, that it was clearly Fulham fans. Only Fulham fans were the only people in the country just going like, oh, for the love of God, come on, United. Up all the teams. Come on, raise your game for this one. I don't care if you're crap in every other one, but please. Oh, God, Billy the Bee is going to be unbearable when I inevitably have to speak to him this week. We'll come on to that Brentford game. Paul, I felt like the rest of the team, Anthony Robinson down the left, had another really, really strong game. I don't think he put a foot wrong. Two games in a row now where I think we've seen Anthony Robinson back to his best. I also thought that João Palhinha, again, not as effective as he was against Liverpool. I think the yellow card stifled him a little bit, but still, you know, a Rolls-Royce performance for him, particularly in the first half. I'm particularly impressed with those two at the start of the season, Robinson and Palhinha.
Mm. Yeah, it is a bit bizarre. Someone had said to us in April that after two games, you're playing your championship team, but a slightly weakened version, because Wilson's obviously injured, our best winger. A weaker number 10, but a better number 6. But yeah, Robinson, I thought, was super. I thought he got a lot of unfair criticism last season. And I've always liked him because I think he's so positive kind of going forward. But I think him and Bobby Dekovarid are better in the Premiership than they are in the Championship. They just look better players. It's and I thought some of the work with Harrison Reed, the two Reeds together, you know, and for the penalty and stuff, I thought there were some great little cameo moments from those two, you know, kind of linking up. But they just look so much more comfortable in the Premier than they do the Championship, which is quite bizarre, you know, whether it's kind of a bit of couple of better players around them or what? I don't know.
It is a bit odd, Farrell, isn't it? Bobby Decker Dover, we were talking yesterday that he feels stronger at this level than at the championship. Obviously, he did so well in that Scott Parker season. Was he our top scorer? I'm pretty sure he's our top scorer in the end. I mean, it didn't take a lot, but still, he was our top scorer. I was particularly impressed with him yesterday. Won the penalty as well, which was a nearly really nice run, and he drew the foul. So yeah, for me, Bobby Decker Dover Reed, very comfortable with him at this level.
Yeah, absolutely. He does. I don't know what it is. Like, you know, he has raised his game in the Premier League and probably was one of our standout performers, if there was one, in the Premier League last time around, as you said. And what's really good about him is that he's obviously very versatile. It's strange that he was our top goal scorer when mostly he played at right wing back under Scott Parker a couple of years ago. And actually, when you think about it, last year, he did start a lot of games, but actually it was no guarantee that he was playing every week because, you know, we had Harry Wilson on the right, we had Carvalho in the middle, and we had Cabano on the left. And there was a bit of chop and change between Cabano and Bobby Reed for that position, but that was about it really for Bobby Reed. And then into this season, he started really well, and I don't think he's in danger of losing his place anytime soon. Of course, there are injuries in his position at the moment, but you know, if you're looking at that and if you're looking that all of our players are fit and Bobby Reed actually started and we still had Harry Wilson and Manor Solomon to call upon, then I think it would be Cabano that would be dropped, not Bobby Reed. The other side of it, though, is that, again, going back to his versatility, is that we were also talking about Andres Pereira. And I mean, I spoke about it last week a little bit, but I'm going to mention it again, that I don't think he's performing at the level that we really need. I think he's got all the attributes of a player that fits into this system, that tenacity up top to really help and support Mitro, but he's really, really wasteful on the ball yesterday. And I think it's not really very good for the system. And then when we were talking, you know, we spoke about sort of, well, who else do we play in that position? And the only real name that could play that position in that style would be Bobby Reed. And I think that's a testament to how well he's played, how well he's got back into the team, and is not looking like he's going to be dropped anytime soon.
Yeah, Adam, Andres Pereira was particularly frustrating yesterday. I wasn't wholly convinced by the performance against Liverpool. There were some nice touches. He looked positive. He's bright on the ball. I don't know. He's one of those players that I wouldn't be surprised if someone draws out some stats and pulls up that what he's doing off the ball is absolutely vital to the way we play. But the eye test at the moment for me is very mixed. I can try and see what he's trying to do. He always is trying the very ambitious ball. It's just not really coming off. And maybe yesterday against a well-organized, resolute unit like Wolves, They just kind of ate it for breakfast, really. Admittedly, it was his pass deflected that led to the penalty, but I think was really the main positive thing he did in the game.
I'd agree with you in the fact that I think his final output has not been good enough just yet. I think we're looking at a player who has been given some chances in a Man United team that's always been under pressure. He's never really had the freedom to flourish. And I think he's probably feeling that pressure already at Fulham in that he has to perform from day dot. Now, I still don't think there's, as Farrell said, anyone that could probably fill that position other than Bobby Decker Dover Reed. And we've already got a great place for him in our team. I think that the thing is with Andres Pereira is that if you give him a run of games, we haven't really seen him get that anywhere in the Premier League to actually see what he can do in time. I think we need one player that is always going to try that extra pass or that, you know, the pass that no one else sees. Usually that used to be Tom Kearney, but with no Tom Kearney in the team, we need somebody who's going to try something a little bit different, especially without Harry Wilson, who is often a creator for our team. Now, I think that him coming into the team this season has been a positive overall. We just aren't seeing him performing maybe at the level that some of, you know, João Paulinho coming in the sixth role has really made it harder to make an impact in our team. Because if you're comparing everything to his performances, it's going to look slightly underwhelming. But if we compare him to previous maybe loan signings that we've brought in around the same position, he's making a slightly better impact there. I think we can only really judge it after maybe 6-7 games. And I think he'll get a run of games at Fulham.
Yeah, I'm prepared to give him time, absolutely. It was such a difficult game yesterday. Everything you almost kind of that you say in terms of the, literally the whole performance, you have to put the caveat that it was just roasting, and it was just it was a bitty game. It just it screamed 0-0 from the first minute. Paul, obviously Fulham did have the one big opportunity. Bobby Decker Dover-Reed won the penalty. At first I was like, oh, is that soft? See the replay, a bit similar to the Liverpool game, really. And it was quite clearly a pen, and it was a good decision by the referee. Mitrovic on penalties. It's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah, coming back with Charlie, and we kind of looked up that he's missed a third of his penalties in professional football, which is quite a big chunk. But, you know, he was successful up to this one, I think, with his last seven. And I think keepers have always been fairly near it. And I must admit, I'm never that confident. But I'm not sure who else would take a penalty, though, in that team. You know, I don't know. I don't know if Polino has taken penalties. I don't think Pereira has. I just, going back on the Pereira thing, I just don't see him ever scoring. I don't know. That scares me. But, yeah, I think we need maybe, you know, if he misses another one, you know, somebody else take a pen. Who can take a pen?
I'm just double checking, Paul, that no animal is being slaughtered in the background of your of your conversation there.
Yeah, that's my wife's parrot. So unfortunately, yeah, and yeah, it is being sacrificed.
They're trying to chirp in and on the conversation about penalty takers.
What the parrot is saying, that Bobby Reed's the best penalty taker in our squad and has never been given one penalty.
I think so, something like that, yeah.
I did do an article on it back in the during that fateful time where Fulham kept missing penalties and Scott Parker when we're behind closed doors. And the overall research was that Bobby Decker Dover-Reed has a 100% success record from the spot. But look, Marcus Silva was pretty adamant afterwards that he missed one, he'll take the next one. So I don't think there is any debate that Mitrovic will carry on taking penalties. It was a 50-50 gamble. Saar went the right way and he just put it a little bit too close to him. There's not much more analysis, I feel like, that's needed. Hopefully it just doesn't spark what we saw last time. Mitrovic missed a couple of big penalties, which is obviously a goal drought. But I'm hoping that one penalty, he's made of a bit sterner stuff than that. I know strikers play on confidence, but I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I think Mitrovic will be fine to take the next one. I think considering that we went through that patch a little while ago with Mitro and penalties again, but he came back stronger. And that's the mark of the person that we're in, Alexander Mitrovic. He's had his low points in his career. And obviously the penalty against Scotland as well to not get them qualified. But he comes back, he scores an absolute hatful of goals. He's been brilliant at penalties ever since. And obviously yesterday, it's just one blip.
Adam, the rest of the game was a bit of a Wolves bombardment. They brought a lot of players off the bench. Adama Traore, their new signing, Gonzalo Guedes, who looks rubbish. Maybe he'll improve, but it was quite an eye-openingly bad debut from him. But I thought Fulham were pretty comfortable in the hole. I was never too convinced that we were going to throw it away late on. There is a dogged determination that I think Fulham can see out a point, and hopefully in the next few weeks we can start seeing out 3 points. I think Fulham do know what to do late on when we're under the cosh.
I think so. I think we've set this team up as well in getting a few early points at this point in the season is incredibly important. We've had a much better start because of that. And I think later on in the season, we might start to see us take a few risks to try and go for the win. At this point in time, when it's as hot a day as it was, it's as dogged a game as it was, let's just try and grab the point where we can. And it was actually really impressive that we could kind of sit back and actually take some pressure. Again, Guedes didn't have the best game when he came on. We can all admit that one. But when I saw Adama Traore come on with all the space that they had got down the flanks already, I thought that would unearth some more trouble for us. They just didn't have anybody who could finish on the day. And if I think, you know, let's say Mitrovic had been on their side, I genuinely think they would have won the game because they would have had someone to put it in the net. It was really the thing I really liked about Fulham as well is we didn't look to panic as well. We've often seen some managers just, let's just throw on, we could have thrown on Shane Duffy at the end, right? But instead, some of the substitutions that were made were a little bit more positive. We see the likes of Jay Stanfield coming on, to actually try and impact the game in a positive manner rather than saying, let's sit back. We still dealt with the pressure well, but we didn't set ourselves up for failure.
Yeah, no, it was a positive end to the game and an encouraging stat. It's the first time since 2010 that Fulham have avoided defeat in their opening two Premier League games. That was the Mark Hughes season, which when I looked back to find this stat, we actually went the first seven games unbeaten. Admittedly, it was one win and six draws, which is maybe what we're kind of on target for now. I'd definitely take it if that was on offer. And we finished 10th that season, so that's a decent omen. Two games unbeaten. Come on, the Whites. All right, we're going to take a break there. Afterwards, we've got some questions to answer.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast is Sammy James here with Farrell Monk, Adam Farquharson, and Paul Cooper making his debut with Sid as the parrot in the background as well, chirping in with some of his opinions on yesterday's match as well. I like that the name Sidders, surely named after the great Steve Sidwell, Paul.
Of course, absolutely, yeah. He's a ginger parrot.
The ginger Iniesta of the parrot world. Let's come on to some of your questions. Charlie Mitchell asks, I'll start with you, Farrell, on this one. Does it make it harder to attract top players who are looking for game time if we sign Leno and then keep him on the bench for weeks?
I think it's a good question to ask. I think that the players are smart enough to sort of do their research on Fulham anyway beforehand. I think that specific situation where it's Bernd Leno and Marek Rodak. Yeah, I think that Bernd Leno was probably feeling a slight bit aggrieved, but he's probably been in this situation before and knows he's got to be a top professional beforehand. And I think any other player would be doing exactly the same thing, that they, you know, they might feel that they're going to be able to get into the first team if they're strong enough and they perform at a level expected of them.
Do we think this is a play to potentially keep Rodak as well? Because if we think about this, like if Marek Rodak stays, you know, keeping his place until the transfer window closes and then they're replacing with Bernd Leno, we actually have a better backup keeper than Gazzaniga potentially coming in. Whereas if immediately Rodak's replaced, we know from his comments as well, he's probably just going to get up and leave and we would be left with a slightly worse backup keeper. So it's actually pretty smart whilst he's not making too many mistakes to keep him in the team, keep him happy, because he's a better squad player for us to have.
Yeah, and also he just hasn't lost his place. We've got a good one here. It's not really a question from Jakob, but it's a good point to bring it in our Fulhamish community, where he says, on Rodak, why do people think it's okay to keep pushing for him to be dropped when he's played really well in both games so far, kept us in the game in the early stages yesterday and has done literally nothing wrong? I fully agree. And I don't think Bernd Leno is going to be there like, oh, what's going on here? Again, Farrell, you mentioned that he's a professional. He's come in and I don't think would be arrogant enough to just be like, I'm coming in and I'm just number one. You know, you're coming into a club where there was an incumbent number one who had an okay-ish season last year. Yes, didn't set the world alight in goal, but I think Bernd Leno is big enough and old enough and ugly enough to, I can't say ugly enough after the podcast last week, can I? It was a turn of phrase, I think he's old enough and wise enough to realise that that's the situation. I'm confident he probably will break through by the end of the season. It feels inevitable. But right now, when Rodak's playing well, he has to keep the gloves. We'll see what Leno produces against Crawley Town, no doubt, in the Carabao Cup, which I'm very excited for as a Horsham lad. Stephen Watson, Adam says, who the hell were all those crosses to? No one was even in the box. Has hints of Parker. It was infuriating yesterday, a few of the crosses that came in. Mitra, I think, actually potentially taking a bit of blame as well, because there's a few that got put in. Yes, I think they were mostly poor crosses, but Mitra was sometimes a bit sluggish to get into the box as well. I felt like our attacking play, if you compare it to last season, was extremely diminished, and we're just missing those key players, aren't we? To lose Wilson, to lose Solomon, and obviously to lose Carvalho in the way we did, it is such a huge blow to this side and its attacking potential.
Yeah, for sure. I think what's happened by losing, you know, Wilson and even the option of having Solomon is that more of the attacking onus has actually fallen on our wing-backs. Now, our wing-backs have great crossing ability, but maybe actually the decision-making is where it can struggle a little bit, you know, knowing to wait until Mitrovic is in the box and having that telepathy that, you know, Wilson seemed to have with Mitrovic to just know exactly where he was going to be at points in time, knowing that he's maybe not the fastest player. He's not going to be in the box as soon as you put in your first-time cross. I totally agree with the question. Where were those crosses going to? Taking a look up, you'd see that there's no one in the box. Let's try and wait it out. But I think that's largely happened because we've got more inside wingers. You know, Cabano's largely cutting in, same thing with Deckard over Reed. They're not the ones putting in crosses. It's largely falling on fullbacks who, as I said, just don't have that in their locker just yet to be able to know where Mitrovic is. I still think that will come in time, and you might even get some, you know, late runs from Harrison Reed and others coming into the box. But we don't throw players forward like no one's business like we did last season, which was great to see. But whilst we're being a little bit more defensive, throwing crosses in the box is only going to lead to the opposition getting the ball back and it flooding into our penalty area, which we want to avoid.
Paul Dara in our Fulhamish community asks, we didn't make our first substitute until the 83rd minute. Given the heat, do you think Marco should have made some before this? Was he waiting for Large to make the first move, or did we just not have enough on the bench to change the game? It was surprising because I was expecting a substitute in the 60th-ish minute, particularly players with Andres Pereira just visibly struggling. Cabano looked knackered. I found it, but I also wondered, was Marcus Silva trying to make a point here?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the comment around me and everyone, you know, we were basically saying, why isn't Cairney on for Pereira? And in the end, of course, it was a force change and he came off injured. So, and I don't quite know what the injury is like. It looked pretty nasty. He was, you know, hobbling away. And also Tete was clearly absolutely, you know, gassed. And so I was surprised that that didn't materialize till later on. So, yeah, I think definitely by putting on, I think he was making his point really when he put on Francois and Stansfield. And I thought Stansfield actually played pretty well when he came on. I think that was the comment. Yeah. You couldn't see that happening through the whole of last season, you'd be amazed, let alone in the Premiership. I thought that was quite surreal.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't see Stansfield really at all last year, apart from in the Cups, and then suddenly we're in the Premier League and he's coming on as a substitute. I mean, great. I thought he actually looked quite bright, quite positive when we came on. Aaron Lamb in our community asked, what did you make of Stansfield when he came on? Adam Eosk asks, is there a place for him long-term in the squad? I'd like to hope there is. I don't see any reason, particularly with so many subs, that Jay Stansfield can't make a bit of a role. He's grown a little bit as well. I feel like he seems a bit more likely to cope physically than when I saw him. I remember watching him in the Carabao Cup against Leeds last season and thinking, God, you're small.
He's not going to be, you know, he's never going to replace Mitrovic as, you know, our target man necessarily, but I do think there's a place for him in games. We've also seen, you know, from last season, even looking back to the times where Marco would sometimes struggle a little bit to when we're not getting ahead in games, how can we make an impact or bring on Rodrigo Muniz? Now, I love him, but at the same time, two up top doesn't really work for Fulham if they're both a target man player. Now, if you bring on someone like Stansfield, you know, at this point in time as a second striker, he's one of the better options that we have at the club. If you put him out wide, he seems to do incredibly well. And I actually think that having one player that's always pushing the starting lineup from the youth teams is a great thing, because otherwise we've seen the situation before with Harvey Elliott, with Fabio Carvalho, where they probably look at, you know, how often have Fulham kept these players? How often have they given them opportunities in the Premier League? Now we're finally able to say, well, if we do give Stansfield the regular opportunities, there is actually a path through to the first team. I think he warrants his place, not just because he's young, but he clearly has ability. So I think bringing him on later in games, the five sub rule will benefit him no ends, because he's not going to be held up by saying, oh, they've already made their three, I'm never going to get on the pitch here. I think towards the end of games, giving him 10 minutes is regularly going to be a good thing for Fulham.
Yeah, interesting one. Tim actually said in our Fulhamish community in response to Stansfield and Francois playing, he said that he had to play Stansfield and Francois because they have so few players, which does very much sound like he's pushing Tony for those signings. Farrell, there has been some chatter about who Fulham will bring in. Now we know that Solomon's picked up this injury. Wilson's got quite a long-term injury. Obviously there's talk about Justin Cliver, but also rumours about Willian. At first I thought that was a done deal at one point last week. It now seems a little bit more in the air than it was. I mean, it's a no-brainer really for me, bringing in someone like Willian. Yes, he's 34. Yes, he's kind of been weirdly hounded out of his current club in Brazil by the fans, but you just need someone that can do a job. A Ryan Babel. It's a kind of Ryan Babel signing, isn't it? Yes, he might be a bit old and past it for the top six, but if he can come on, be a silky winger that can change a game coming on, I'd be more than happy if in yesterday's game, Fulham had trotted off Willian off the bench for the final 25 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it pains me to say this out loud, but, you know, he was probably one of my favourite players when he, you know, at Chelsea. I don't know, that's kind of disgusting to say, but, you know, he was pretty good for them. And I quite liked him as a player, not who he played for, that's for sure. I think it does make sense, the signing. If we can get him on a short-term deal that doesn't cost us a lot of money, he does bring a bit more experience into the changing room as a winner, certainly at this level. He's also really versatile as well. He can probably play in any of the sort of midfield positions. He could probably do that job alongside Mitro. Yes, he's probably lost a bit of his athletic ability, but he's got the ability, he's got the know-how and the nous to sort of make up for any sort of pace that he's now lacking. A few weeks ago, before these injury problems, I probably would have questioned that decision. But right now, I think it's certainly something that we do need to plug the gap with, because ending the game with Tyrese Francois playing at left wing is probably highlighting where the squad is at right now, and it's looking very paper thin. I would much prefer to have been able to bring on Willian at left wing as opposed to Tyrese Francois.
Fulham and Wolves' first 11 right now, considering they're lacking a striker, it's not an awful lot between it. Quality-wise, yes, I think Wolves have got a bit more Premier League experience in there, but you only had to look at the options they could bring off the bench. Players like Nelson Semedo, Adama Traore, their new signing, Gonçalo Guedes. Yes, he looked pony, but I'm sure he'll improve, and he's obviously an expensive player. Now with five subs as well, I think depth and quality on the subs bench is so much more important, and you can promise players more game time because of those five subs as well. So fingers crossed, you know, it's an enforced situation to not just lose one but two of your best wingers is a really difficult situation. Hopefully Fulham can fix it. Feels like Wilson won't be like the too longer injury, but Manor Solomon, I don't think we're seeing him this side of the World Cup. It, you know, if he's having knee surgery, that is a long-term injury. I mean, really wish him well as well. What a gutting situation for him just as he's got to England. So fingers crossed, get someone in temporary. Willian sounds fine to me, but there must be some other wingers just down the local park or something like that. There's always a tricky winger, isn't there, whenever you play five a side that can do a job. Farrell and I used to play with a winger called Peanut, who was the most frustrating player to play with, but he was a tricky winger. I'm sure he'd fill in, wouldn't he, for 3 months, Farrell. Peanut on the left wing.
That would be quite funny. We used to call him 1 in 10 Peanut, because that's how many chances he would convert. Like, that's how many chances he would create and then subsequently actually score. What an enigma. Yeah. He was. Where are you, Peanut?
Well, he might be at Motspur Park if I get my way. Anyway, we'll take a break there. Afterwards, we're going to look at the rest of the state of the Premier League. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Farrell, Adam and Paul. Just wanted to have a bit of a look of a wider state of play of where Fulham are. Adam, currently in 12th position. I know it doesn't matter, but two draws from two, currently the only side to have done that. This is before Liverpool's game against Palace. If they draw, they'll be the other side that could potentially be on two from two. And it's a bit of an odd situation, isn't it, when you've drawn your two opening games, especially in the situation that they've happened for Fulham, where we've had opportunities to win both of them. Obviously, the Liverpool game, we were leading with 10 minutes to go. Yesterday, we had a penalty with approximately 10 minutes to go. But also, especially given the stat I named earlier, haven't lost our opening two games as well. Feels positive. I just don't know what to make of it. But I think overall, it's fine. A lot of it almost rests on the game against Brentford, because you win that and that's a brilliant start. Lose it and suddenly, thinking, looking over your shoulder, wondering that Bournemouth and Forest have both won games and we haven't. And also, you don't have to look at the fixture list ahead and think, not sure where our first win's coming from if it isn't against Brentford.
Oh, you mentioned Brentford. My stomach just did a flip. It's not great, is it? Just when you know, as you say, the pressure is really on this game, but it could have been much worse. We always have to remember Fulham could have lost the first two. We're looking at the Brentford game as a must win. We're looking at this saying, you know, yes, I'd love to get a win out of this game. Don't get me wrong. I know that there's a lot of games coming up, but it took us a long time to get to this point in previous Premier League seasons. And I think that starting it in a steady eddy format that we are isn't the worst thing in the world, because you get some of these other teams where, you know, it's the hope that kills you. They'll be looking at it thinking, yeah, we're all on the up. We've beat these teams. It's all going to be plain sailing from here. Whereas I think Fulham are building from a strong base foundation, and Brentford is going to be a massive game. If we can win that one, we really jump up the table. But I'm also a little bit more careful knowing that at least we have 2 points on the board. If it was 0 points at this point in time, I'd be very scared about that Brentford game.
Yeah, Farrell, Brentford up next. It's such a good result yesterday. You can't even take it away from them. Like, it's an amazing performance by them. Yes, United are an absolute bin fire, but it's just going to be a really, really difficult game, isn't it? And they're looking good this season. Despite losing Eriksen, they seem to be better. And Damsgaard's such a clever signing as well that they've got to add to their squad later on.
I mean, clever signing is basically their mantra, isn't it, over the past clever 5 or 6
FC,
years?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, we look at Brentford, we don't like them, but we sort of envy how they've got to the position that they have. And I'm not talking about the Lego Stadium by any means.
Let's call it the G-Tech now, Farrell. That's its name.
The G-Tech Stadium. Oh, yes. Okay. Have we signed a contract with them or something? To
No, they've signed a contract with them.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I'm not going to call it the G-Tech. I'm still going to call it the Lego Stadium. and it's definitely the one that we were looking to win. Now this is new again. We're getting to the point where we need a win on the board suddenly to sort of give ourselves a nice little platform, because as Adam quite rightly just said previously, it took us so long to get our first win, and you're already, you know, on the back foot massively, and you know, then the nerves start happening, then the crowd starts getting on the back. The only problem is that Brentford have a really good record at Craven Cottage in recent years, and it's so annoying. I wish it was QPR that we're playing next. That would be nice, but it's not. It's Brentford. They're going to be coming at us. This is the game that they've been looking forward to ever since Fulham confirmed promotion last year. I think it's going to be a really good game. I think that Marco knows what's riding on this game now. He got them fired up massively for that Liverpool game, which was, you know, a little bit like so pleasantly surprising. It yesterday was, you know, we went toe to toe with what is now an established Premier League club, with, you know, a squad depth that, you know, we're looking at very enviously. Next week, I've got no doubts Marco will be saying to the players the sort of the level that we need to be at to get a result from this. I'm looking forward to it, to be honest. I won't be there annoyingly, but I'm certainly looking forward to it to be able to watch it, really.
Yeah. Paul, if you had to give Fulham a mark out of 10 for these opening two games, what would you give? Because I'm a bit on the fence with it, because I think we've played well in parts. The Liverpool game was amazing. 2 points out of 6 is kind of fine, but could be a bit better, you know?
Probably an 8 for the Liverpool game and about a 6, I think, yesterday. So average of about 7.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens in that game against Brentford. We'll have a full preview on the Thursday Club with myself, Jack and Peter. Adam, all we need to do is name today's podcast. So what would you like to go for from the three-word reviews that came in?
I'm going to go for Hutchie 100 with Everyone's on Fire, just because you never want to forget those flamethrowers.
Honestly, they will be rent-free inside my head for a long time. All of this week, basically until I think it cools down, I'm still feeling the radiation that came off of those yesterday. It was the most intense heat ever, but we got through it. We got a point. We came away from Wolves still unbeaten. The dream of an invincible season for Fulham is still on. Thank you very much to my panel today, all dressed in white, the White Wall Volume 2. Farrell Monk, thank you.
Thank you.
Adam Vicarson, thank you.
Thanks so much, Sammy.
Paul Cooper, thank you.
Yep, thank you. And here's the next generation. So
come on, up to Fulham.
And that was my daughter.
I love that in the black away kit from last season. What's the one's name?
Jack.
Jack. Yep. Future podcast host, I see there.
He's a lefty, yeah. So, yeah.
Who's Jack's favourite player?
Who's your favourite player, Jack? You can't actually speak yet, but Metro! There, well done.
All right, then. Well, thank you very much for listening today. Have a great start to your week. Fulham are still unbeaten. Got to take the positives. But until the Thursday Club, have a good one. Come on, you whites.
You whites.